Last week, Olivia Rodrigo made a surprise appearance at the White House's afternoon press briefing to help promote youth vaccinations. Seth Meyers crushed it. He said her appearance should have a big impact on the millions of teens who watch the White House press briefings. That's right. She made a surprise appearance at the afternoon press briefings. It was almost as surprising as when Sarah Sanders would appear at one. Side note here, it's nice to see a real celebrity at the White House after the last 4 years when the previous president could only manage to dig up the likes of Ted Nugent or Scott Baio. Biden's got huge celebrities helping him out with an unprecedented nationwide campaign to get all Americans vaccinated. And all Trump could muster was 18 holes with Kid Rock in his flag pants, which looked like something you'd buy for $6 at a truck stop because you tore the crap out of your good pants rock climbing on peyote. But it's still nice that they're trying. It's not like they're working on commission or trying to get you to upgrade to Pfizer's friends and family plan. Everybody just wants this pandemic to end, and the fastest way out is the vaccine. Maddeningly, we're dealing with a political movement that's made spreading lies about vaccines one of their central political projects. It's become a culture war issue for them. They're even selling merch now, including a "How the hell am I going to drink a beer with a mask on" koozie and a "Don't Fauci my Florida" shirt. Wish those were jokes. Those are real things. Seth Meyers said, cool, so the Republican Party is basically just hot topic for boomers now. Florida is currently reporting daily cases close to 4 times the national average, with the second highest number in the country, and DeSantis is selling merch like he's at a folding table outside the Warped Tour. Two podcasts I want you to listen to other than this one, of course. Conan O'Brien had on Weird Al, a tremendous listen. I'll listen to Weird Al talk to anybody. And the other one is the Good One podcast that Vulture does. They had on Dan Harmon, Dan, the creator of Community and Rick and Morty. Think about that, Community and Rick and Morty. The Vulture guy said, during the first 3 seasons of Community, it felt like the press didn't just ignore rumors and little asides that the show was really hard to work on, but they used it as proof of your greatness, like, he's so dedicated to making this funny, he doesn't care how long he's making them work. How has your thinking and feeling about being a boss evolved, Dan Harmon? Dan Harmon said, older age and technology and exhaustion and being called out all intersected with, I want to get home by 5. And that should be a human right. A lot of cement mixers listening to this would be like, oh, you're home by 5 after thinking for a living, la-di-da. I wouldn't argue with that, but I will say in therapy, what I've learned about people who study the brain of people who do creative work, it's not like bricklaying. But if you sit for 4 hours and do nothing but not know what to do, it's what we do to prisoners to punish them for being bad at prison. They take them out of where there's certainty about things and they put them into solitary confinement. And we're waking up to that being mental torture. To my cement mixer brothers out there and my EMT workers and anybody listening to this, I'm not saying that what we do is difficult or even important, but I will say is, yeah, if you do it for 8 hours straight, you tend to get the same result. That 4 additional hours of people wanting to slit your throat and your sleep doesn't help, and the less sleep makes you hit the drawing board in the morning of a state of confusion. I would literally put myself in a daze back then. I was popping Adderall like Pez and sleeping on my office couch. My definition of when to stop was when the job was done, which is the definition of suicide if your job is creative. And you're the one in charge of when it's done. How do you know when a joke is finished? How do you know when a story is finished? I would just sit. And then if you were obedient enough, you would sit with me. And then your reward for that, which I'm unfortunately infamous for, is like, maybe I love you. Maybe you're here because you love me. And it's like, no, you pay me to be here. I can't leave or I'll get fired. That is why I transgressed those boundaries, because I was in this fugue state. I would sleep for 20 minutes and then think about the show for 3 hours. Dan Harmon continues, what Rick and Morty taught me after leaving Community was I would sit in the edit bay with Justin Roiland, and weeks before broadcast, we'd still be changing things in the edit bay in an episode that took 1.5 years to make. Season 3 or 4 of Rick and Morty, I started to realize, my God, we're changing the episode the same amount we would change it if we'd spent longer writing it. A bomb went off in my head where I was like, how long did I make the animators wait for this script? And every time the line producer appeared in my doorway and said, we really need to record voices tomorrow, and I was like Orson Welles or something, I would say to them, they need to adopt my religion. You're in the Matrix, man. Don't you understand? It does you no good to record a bunch of voices recording things I'm only going to rewrite. Why don't you just wait until it's finished and then you record something that would be ready for the people? It took me so long to realize that's not true. You're not an architect. You're not making blueprints. The difference between a writer in TV and an architect is the architect is going to kill people if they don't put the electrical outlets in the right place on their little map of how to build the building, and the concrete is going to harden. And then the changes can't be made. A writer is creating a memo to hand off to his collaborators. His hundreds of collaborators are being paid huge amounts of money and being asked to go away from their families to help you by saying in animation, for instance, well, this is what stick figures would look like if they're doing this thing that you wrote for 30 pages. And then you look at the stick figures and you go, oh, wow. wow, those stick figures are wasting time for 3 minutes. I think maybe we should, you're writing with others. You're not a novelist. You're publishing a script that's being adapted by your underlings. You're dancing with 300 people. And I think that would apply even to live action. You know, now that I'm looking at this, this is so deep. I'm not being coy with you. Go listen to the Vulture podcast. It is called Good One. You can hear Dan Harmon say these words himself without me reading them to you, or go to vulture.com and they've got the interview here that I am cribbing off of. But I'm going to save more of this for tomorrow. Plus, the answer to whether or not we're getting a community movie. The answer seems to be yes, but the devil is in the details. So I'm going to break this up and get back to more of this tomorrow. Let's move on for now. Bobcat Goldthwait spoke to the Daily Herald and said, I'm the Daniel Craig of DuPage. Bobcat Goldthwait, on living in the suburbs and returning to stand-up after spending more than 3 decades in Hollywood, relocating from Southern California to DuPage County might seem an odd decision for the Police Academy veteran. He said, moving to the Midwest made sense because I'm considered thin. They moved to the suburbs last January in the midst of the pandemic. It occurred to him that he could live anywhere and still work. He said, I'm really happy to live here. We live on an acre and a half on a dead-end street surrounded by woods. I spend a lot of time with a chainsaw and an axe. The big change is I get up there on stage now and I enjoy it. I don't assume I'll walk into a club and they'll put me on stage. His set is no nostalgia show. Fans shouldn't expect his earlier Bobcat persona. He says, any place where it's still the 80s, people are disappointed. I said I'm not going to age gracefully. If they expect me to do Freebird, that's not going to happen. I wouldn't have done that persona if I was trying to become a sitcom star. I had always hoped to do what I was interested in doing. If people came along, cool. His comedy heroes include Groucho Marx, George Carlin, Andy Kaufman, and Tom Kenny, who's the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, whom he describes as the funniest person he's ever met. Bobcat says, I'm not a social media presence. I'm a VHS comedian living in a TikTok world. From CNA Lifestyle, say it with me, your home for comedy news, Daily Show correspondent Ronnie Cheng is working with Sony on an action comedy feature film. The untitled movie is described as a martial arts comedy. Meanwhile, Mike.com recapped Joel Kim Booster's appearance on John Moe's Depression Mode podcast. Moe asked gentle but probing questions to chisel away what was going on. Joel Kim Booster said he hasn't been able to write jokes in a year and a half since before the pandemic. He's convinced his comedy career is kaput and he'll have to fall back on acting. Joel Kim Booster disclosed he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder about 2 years ago. He suspects his best writing came from manic episodes, and now that he's medicated, he worries those bursts of inspiration are gone. Booster apologized for being a downer at several points in the interview, and Moe offered to pull back if his line of questioning got too intense. Sounds like a very compelling interview. You'll find that on John Moe's Depression Mode. And the BBC has launched a new comedy award for 2021 with new categories including Under 18s and Digital Comedian. The BBC New Comedy Awards, established in 1995, will this year comprise 6 regional heats airing on BBC 3, BBC One, and BBC iPlayer. The final will be on BBC One later this year. Mawan Rizwan will be the head judge and joined at each location by a different panel of local celebrity judges. He said, I'm so flattered and honored to be the first comedy laureate. I never thought I'd be associated with the word laureate. My parents are actually impressed for once. The bit I'm most excited about is finding the next generation of comedy talent who wouldn't otherwise get a shot at this. There are still so many underrepresented voices, and I can't wait to hear from them. The main prize for the over 18s category is £1,000 and a paid commission to write and perform in a 30-minute audio pilot mentored by a BBC comedy commissioner. Comedy commissioner? That's a gig? Wow. The young comic winner, they get screwed. They only get £500. What's with that? And help securing their first 3 paid gigs. Here's $10. While the digital prize is a paid commission for a comedy short. And that is your comedy news for today. More with Dan Harmon tomorrow. But like I said, that's on Vulture, or check out the Good One podcast. This podcast here, and probably Good One as well, you can get wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. See you tomorrow.